Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me as always is the man running for mayor of Parts Unknown, reminding you to get out and rock the vote. He is the captain.
I will be kissing wives and smacking babies. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Tonight we are drinking Tuckerman Brewing Company's Pale Ale out of Conway, New Hampshire. Garage grade, 3.5 bottle caps out of 5. This is their flagship pale ale, brewed with 4 types of hops. Mm. This brew is cold conditioned and dry hopped in lagering tanks for maximum taste and quality. And this great pale ale was brought to us by these great guys and girls. First up, we have Ken from Waterloo, Ontario, Canada.
And we got Jessica with her terrible towel all the way in Pittsburgh.
Next, we have Barb in Dallas, Texas, who says she is glad she found the garage because she was tired of running around with lesser true crime podcasts.
Well, she's throwing some shade. And a big shout out to Kelsey in Buffalo Grove, Illinois.
And a big thank you to Connie in beautiful Huntington Beach, California. And last but not least, a big shout out and thank you to Bobby and his better half, Aubrey, in Tracy, California. So thank you all for filling up the fridge for this week. If you want to buy us around for next week's show, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
And like Nick said, I'm running for mayor and governor and senator and president. El Presidente, El Capitan of Parts Unknown. And if you'd like to be a resident of Parts Unknown, go to our website, go to the store, and check out the new Parts Unknown t-shirts.
And that's a 2-week pre-order. You got 2 weeks starting right now, so go to the website and get that done today.
All right, let's get in the garage. We're back talking with true crime author James Renner and Maggie, the beautiful Maggie, and the beautiful Art, the host of Oxygen's The Disappearance of Mara Murray.
All right, Captain, that's enough of your propaganda and enough of the business. Everybody gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
Vote for the captain. One of the things I love about this documentary, The Disappearance of Mara Murray, is the host, Maggie and Art, are asking the tough questions. They're asking tough questions to law enforcement, to the family, asking tough questions to podcasters, to author James Renner. And one of the things is, James, from the beginning, you've always been kind of suspicious of the family, but we don't really know how we would act if this happened to us or one of our loved ones.
Now, we say that, but like, I've got 2 kids, and if my daughter went missing,
one hell of a book.
Oh, God.
No, jeez. It's a morbid joke.
Yeah, right. I mean, not a book I'd ever want to write, but like, I would 100% I would open the door, come in here, you know, look through our family, look through our internet search history, you know, everything, you know, that you need to in order to find this person, this kid.
Right.
No, yeah. I mean, we say we don't know how we would act, but there would be nothing I wouldn't do.
Right. Well, the other question too is, do you know if her bank was open that night or that day on that Monday?
All I know is she went up to the ATM and she was able to, she had like close to $300 in her account, and she took out $280. And people get all like up in a tizzy about that detail. They're like, "Whoa, she didn't withdraw all of her money."
Right.
And you shouldn't say she withdrew all of her money because that's untrue. Well, yeah, she kept $16 in there. You're right. It wasn't all.
Well, I still question whether or not Fred gave her the $4,000. I mean, he claims he didn't, but
that's a big question. You know, what happened to that $4,000? Because, you know, she disappears, and how much money does it take to disappear and set up a new life? Well, if she only had $280, that's one thing. But maybe she had $280 plus the $4,000 plus her student loan money. That Monday or the week before that, it might have even been that day. That Monday she disappeared might have been the day that they released the hold on student loan funds. So she could have taken an extra $4,000 to $5,000 on top. So now instead of $280, we're dealing with maybe she disappeared with more like $10,000.
No, but where's she getting this money from, the student loan money?
Well, once you get student loans, you can apply for a certain amount of money. that's over and above your room and board.
Right.
And I did that in school. I lived off of student loans for, I think, 2 years.
Typical author.
I'm still paying back. I think it's possible that that's what she did, is wait until she could withdraw those funds. And they keep a hold on it until couple weeks into the semester.
But do we have a record of her withdrawing those funds?
Maybe the police do. I've never seen any sort of record. It's just speculation. We do know that she had student loans, so...
just thinking out loud, why would the father give his daughter $4,000? We all believe that he's holding back something.
Right.
Maybe it is, oh, by the way, I did give her this money, and it wasn't for her to run away. And never.
She's in trouble for credit card fraud. Is it to pay back somebody that she was...
Somebody else.
Somebody else, yeah. Had she stolen another credit card, and had she run up more than just $70 worth of pizza, was she paying that person off? But that's just speculation, Was it money to seed her to get away from college and set up someplace else? I don't know. It's just weird.
So the other question I have is, this is not an Andy Kaufman story.
Well, I think Andy Kaufman's still alive too, but that's another story.
That's a whole nother episode.
Yeah. That's your next book.
Right.
But there's no evidence of her. I mean, she didn't try to fake her death. Right. Unless
it wasn't like a, yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, think about this. If she hadn't have gotten into the accident on Route 112. And I do think that was an accident. Like, I don't think it was some people, well, did she stage it for no, I don't think so. So let's say she hadn't gotten into that accident and she just left her car in a parking lot somewhere up there, maybe even with a note or something. Nobody outside of the Murray family would have ever heard about this story. Could have left a note and said, I took off. I'm sorry. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. But I think the accident changed everything. Let's say she's going up there to start a new life or to disappear or do something. She gets in that accident. She doesn't want the police to show up.
Right.
Because that's, now she's in a lot of trouble. What is she doing? They're catching her halfway through whatever her plan was. So, let me get in this car that's being driven by this acquaintance and... we're going to take off and maybe the police will leave the car there and we can come back for it. Nope. Oh, the police took it. Oh crap. Right. Now we got to leave the car. Now it looks like a possible crime. So we got to be hush hush about everything from now on, no letters to, friends or family explaining what I was doing up here.
Yeah. It's just her and one, maybe two other people that have to be quiet.
Right.
And that's kind of your theory on her friends. Maybe that they're,
I don't know for sure. I just, the only thing I feel 100% on is that there was a tandem driver and that tandem driver was somebody that she knew, friend or family. I tend to, maybe lean 60% towards it being friend or friends.
Well, I like that you actually said that though, because I'm constantly defending you. but I was telling you this earlier, the one of my favorite things about, being able to, call you a true crime friend is that you put out this amazing book that I bet once a week somebody tells me,
oh, thanks,
this is the best book that I maybe have ever read, which I think is a great compliment.
That's awesome.
Because I hate when somebody would say, it's the best true crime book. I'm like, oh, come on. But I like that you said that the only thing that you're super solid on or 100% on is that there was a tandem driver.
Yeah.
And I think where a lot of people the funny thing is a lot of people say that you're tunnel vision,
mm-hmm.
but then I think that they become tunnel vision on you.
They do. And I think to some extent there's this need on the internet and social media to choose sides. And in society in general, just to choose a side.
Right.
You delve into the Maura Murray case and you end up on, specific Facebook pages and Reddit pages where, for whatever reason, they've decided to turn me into, you know, kind of the bad guy, the bad journalist. Right. And then that's one of the first things they read, and they want to be a part of that community. So they have to like not like James either. But if you spend some time with me, you know, I know there were some people from Reddit that came up to CrimeCon last year and they hung out and got a book and, you know, had a drink or, you know, some snacks at the bar or whatever. You know, within 5 minutes of, you know, hanging out,
right.
You know, and it almost makes me cringe, but, you know, they'll lean forward and they'll say, you know what, you're not as much of an asshole as I thought you were.
A little bit of an asshole.
Yeah,
still
well, yeah,
a little bit,
yeah, we all are, but. Yeah.
Not as much as Nick.
But see, that's the weird thing that I've never understood with, and it's not with everybody in the true crime community, but.
With the Mara case.
Well, there's other cases out there that are similar to this where there are people that they take a side, like you said, they believe in a theory, and if they disagree with your theory, for some reason they've decided they don't like you as a person. Yeah. I don't know how that leap is made.
Right.
You know, we've had it happen on our show where people comment and they're like, Nick, you said that it probably went down like this. Are you some kind of idiot? You know, and it's like, well...
Well, I normally get that directed towards me. And yes, I am some kind of an idiot. But I like that you said that, you know, that's the only thing that you feel 100%. Because I think a lot of times when you bring up the pregnancy or the belief that you think that she's alive, I've never heard you say, I 100% believe that she's alive.
No, of course not. And, you know, with the tandem driver thing, what happened after that is a mystery. Did she go on to another life? A lot of people think I'm sold on this idea that she's in Canada and you know, hanging out and chilling and eating crepes and you know, having babies. And that would be nice. I want to believe that. But there's also the possibility that whoever this tandem driver was killed her.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I'm very open to that possibility.
But if your theory that she... left on purpose to start a new life. If that theory is wrong, let's just say in this hypothetical world,
sure.
I'm telling you 100% that theory is wrong. What's the next theory that you lean towards? Is it just that the tandem driver?
Yeah. Okay. It's that the tandem driver was responsible for her death. You know, did she hit her head harder than we know? And did she pass out and they freaked out and she became comatose or something silly like that? Or did, you know, was she traveling up there with a boyfriend?
Right.
Not the boyfriend, but a boyfriend. And that person was the one that after that accident, you know, killed her. Or, so yes, I'm very much open to that.
You know, when I started looking into the case, the first thing I, after, you know, Wikipedia and a couple other things, I'm going to your blog. And so then to get so much of my information about the case from your blog,
sure,
and then to call you an idiot or a moron just makes zero sense.
Oh, I know. You know, and these people that set up websites or other podcasts, not Tim and Lance's, but other podcasts on this mystery, because there are a couple more.
Right.
And, you know, they that's what they do. They're like, oh, I hate this James Renner. He's such an a-hole. He's such a jerk. Here are 10 documents that James Renner posted on his right. his website that might help us figure out what happened to Maura Murray. You're welcome. Thank you.
I think people should just give you a little more credit for that.
I'm obsessed. I was obsessed with this case. There are other cases that I get very personally involved in. But I've got a life, I think. Yeah.
No,
you know, I've got
You're here with us right? on a Sunday. There's no way you have a life.
This isn't my life, and people seem to think this is, you know, and I don't know. It's frustrating, you know, social media, and, you know, I don't know how you guys are, but, you know, at a point, you just have to walk away and not, like, because 80% of the comments will be positive, but you fixate on those 20%.
But one thing I liked when you set up your blog was it wasn't just you forming an opinion and telling your version of what you think went down with Mara, but you set up a place for people to check out new information and for people to come back to you with information and say, hey, James, I found this. You should consider putting it on your blog.
Yeah, it was this grand idea I had to open the internet and turn it into essentially the writer's room of a newspaper, you know, when I worked at Scene Magazine up in Cleveland, we'd had this writer's room, and I'd write these true crime stories, and we'd gather in the writer's room, and I'd pitch out ideas. I'm like, what about this guy as a suspect? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other writers would come back, well, have you looked at this and this? And it was a new way to gather information, but also to find new avenues of investigation and to use crowdsourcing to try to solve these cases. Now, the way I picture it going down was, you know, if you've ever seen Mickey Mouse in the Sorcerer's Apprentice, mm-hmm. you know, where he's learning from this grand wizard and, you know, he goes up and tries to use some of the magic. Well, I had this grand idea to turn it into a crowdsourcing platform, and everybody would be sociable and fight for the greater good and help each other out. But it got out of control, mm-hmm. and people were not nice to each other, and people were not nice to me. And people, when names were considered as suspects, people would go out and try to shame them instead of realizing that just because their name is mentioned as a possible suspect and they are a possible suspect doesn't mean they're guilty, and they shouldn't be held as we still have a court of law for that reason. You know, let's not consider somebody guilty until they've had their day in court. But that went out the window, and I realized that this grand experiment that I had, it just won't work in the way our culture and society set up. And that was mm-hmm. very upsetting and very sad. And now the blog, you know, I've turned off the comments because people are just mean to each other right now. And I think
that doesn't get us any closer to the truth.
It doesn't. And I want to hope that it's a phase and that, we'll look back at this in 20 years and we're like, oh my God, that was the deep, dark days of the, you know, people being mean to each other in Twitter and Facebook, but I don't see an end to it.
No. And, you know, I was involved in a online community years ago regarding a specific case. And people would log on there and give their opinions on different pieces of evidence or theories that they had. And it got very messy very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It spun out of control into this thing where posters are now accusing one another of being the actual murderer.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, it got so weird and strange in there.
Yeah. I think the only way to fix it is to get rid of anonymity.
Right.
But nobody's going to be for that because they want to be anonymous because they have their daily routine of being an accountant somewhere and they have to follow everybody's rules, but then they can log on as poopshoot69, mm-hmm. you know, at
Gmail.
Oh,
that's a good friend of mine.
Best buds.
And tell you everything you're doing wrong and, you know, that maybe the police should look into you and, you know, stupid stuff like that.
And I think people also forget on a lot of these shows that they edit you.
Yeah.
So it's just like that you were saying before, like you talked to Maggie for a really long time mm-hmm. and then what they put on the show is an edited version of that. And they might eventually go back to that interview.
Yes.
But one of the things that you talked about in the show was the eyewitness accounts. And I wondered that when you guys have gone to these places and looked for, how many people don't recognize the picture that you're showing them? Is it a bunch?
Of Maura Murray?
Yeah.
Oh, 99.9%.
Okay. So it's always just a very small. How many people would you say have said, oh, I know her?
Two or three.
Okay. So
a very small.
Very, very small.
And the
number.
People that believe they saw her are adamant. Like this, and I hope eventually in the doc series we'll get to see her, but there's this employee that worked at the record store up in Montreal, I think,
mm-hmm.
and she was 100%. She's like, no doubt about it, that was her. So, you know, people say there are these unsubstantiated sightings, but they're very good unsubstantiated sightings.
But
it might not be her.
Now, there's a lesser known story within the Maura Murray case. And I want you to tell it for us because I pulled this straight from your book. And it was one of the more, you know, there was a lot of interesting points in there. But this one stood out for me a little bit. It's the, and forgive me if I'm setting this up wrong, but when you were looking into the case, there was a hit on her social security number or a hit on something involving like a shopping card.
Yeah, there are two. I mean, you're hitting on two different stories.
Okay.
So real quick, and then I'll get, because I think I know the one you're going for is a little more dramatic, but there was when I ran her social security number, I got a hit that led me to Saco, Maine. And that turned out to be one of the searchers that was working with Fred Murray after Moore disappeared. And he said, hey, can I put a flag on Moore's social security number? So that linked his address in Saco, Maine to Moore's social. So when I ran it, it popped up. So that was kind of easily explained, although it's still a little weird.
Right.
The shopping cart is interesting. And I think I get the feeling the documentary series might go there because they showed it last night.
Okay.
Inside the car, they're like, oh, hey, look, yeah, a little shopping cart. Now, one of the people that go to the website, when I was crowdsourcing it, somebody read it and they were able to get the exact number off the back of that shopping cart, find the grocery store and run it through their loyalty program system. And it popped up Moore's information and also an email address. Mm-hmm. But that email address wasn't linked to Moore. It was linked to a guy named Richard Thousand, who lives in Cleveland, Ohio, and works as a nurse. So I reach out to Richard and I say, hey, man, your
hey, dude.
Yeah, your email pops up on Moore Murray's shopping card, and Moore Murray's this woman who disappeared in UMass Amherst. And he tells me the story about how he visited the university and met this young woman who he thinks was Moore, and they had lunch together, and then she must have stolen his card, his loyalty card, to get like cheap gas or something. And I'm like, well, Moore is known for stealing cards. You know, that makes a little sense. So I put that information up online, and people right away poked holes in it. And he got back to me and he said, hey, look, I made that story up. The real truth is that, yes, I was at UMass Amherst just for a couple of days for a conference. And when I heard about the Moore Murray case, I became a little obsessed with it and found her shopping cart information and put my email in it so I would get some more information about that card. Mm. So man, talk about red flags.
Right.
You know,
Wait. So he just repeat that.
Yeah, it's weird. So
he puts in his information.
Well, this is the last story he told me. You know, he lied about the first story, he says, so I don't know what the truth is and what's not, but the story he settled on was that he was studying to be a nurse at the same time as Moore, but not going to school at UMass, but visited UMass for a couple days.
For what was the reason?
A conference or something was happening down there. And he said they might have crossed paths, but he's not sure. So he came back to Cleveland. And then when Moore goes missing, he's like, oh, I remember UMass. I was there at the same time. And he starts getting obsessed with the case, finds her shopping cart info, puts in his email address in order to open up the other information. Because it says in order to access, you have to put in an email address.
Right.
So he gets his to link with her shopping card. And so it's weird, right? Like everything about it. And this guy's...
And the fact that he lied before.
Exactly.
Makes it even weirder.
And he's living up in Cleveland. And I've visited the house. I haven't caught him there, but we've talked on the phone. Lives by himself. And I talked to the neighbors. Nobody has seen a young woman up there. But... it's really hard these days to have social media and not be able to find a picture of somebody. There are no pictures of this guy anywhere, on social media, on the internet. That was some information that the cold case unit was really interested in. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling they probably have talked to him or tried to talk to him, but they certainly wanted all the information I had about that guy.
Nick's not on social media much. It's kind of hard to find you.
I can find pictures of.
Yeah, it's because I've posted. Because I post them.
And braziers or.
Well, our listeners love to Photoshop us now, so that's a lot of fun.
Oh right.
The coordinates sent to Tim and Lance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just throw that out there. Talk about it. What's the deal?
Now
with
hold
that?
On. the coordinates were sent to me originally.
They were sent to you. Okay, that's why we're here to talk about.
They love to take credit for it.
I don't know that they did. I was drinking after watching several football games and watching the documentary at the same time.
Oh man, to me those guys are. We had so much fun at CrimeCon and.
Those conventions get crazy though. I did so much blow with Tim and Lance. I'm just joking.
So what about these coordinates?
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're
so the
sent
coordinates
to you.
were sent in, and it was just this email that said stop looking, and the subject or Maura Murray was in there somehow, and it was just these coordinates, and it leads you to part of the White Mountains, right. This desolation trail you have to go to get up there, and it's like a 5-hour hike both ways. I was never able to make it work. Mm-hmm. But it does look, if you look at the trailer for the Maura Murray series, they're hiking, and so I'm guessing they do track down those coordinates, but I have no idea what they found up there,
because they got a little scared. And we've definitely had our share of odd emails, as you have with this case as well. But I err more on the side that whatever's going to happen is going to happen anyway. So yeah. Whether I go on that trail or not,
right?
I don't really have a lot of, like, with the fact that they're like, well, we're just too scared to go. I'm like, ah, oh, come on.
You got to do it. You got to follow through with that. And I think they finally do. My hunch is that it's nothing but an internet troll that wanted to, like, for shits and giggles, just wanted them to
waste their time.
Yeah, waste the time. Waste 10 hours and possibly, you know, endanger.
Well, that's
themselves.
Why they sent it to you.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah. I know better.
Get this asshole to waste his time.
No, thanks.
What was the, did the person use a handle that sent that to you?
The email was redirected through the Netherlands through some sort of remailing email thing. They
Which
hit
is weird,
tracks.
Though, because that email is connected to Maura Murray's Fuel Perks card.
Yeah, right.
No, that's not
true. Tim Horton's loyalty card.
Yeah.
Okay, James, so the book has been out for a while now, and you've had a chance to participate in this docuseries. Where are you at currently with your theory?
As of today... in 2017, October 2nd, right? or is it the 1st? Yeah, today's the 1st. Anyways, I would put my probability at 60% she's out there alive somewhere trying to stay off the grid, maybe Canada, and 40% that she was murdered by whoever this tandem driver was.
Do you have a list of suspects you like more?
Of the
others?
Tandem driver?
Yeah.
It's one of four or five people. Yeah. Like, and I'm not going to go into it specifically.
Right,
but
right.
How many are men? How many are women?
Two of them are men.
Okay.
Three of them are women.
The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Everyone is still talking about Monopoly Go, for a good reason. It is an absolute hit. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Like countless crazy tournaments, you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Or timed events, offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies, to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums. Delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches. Unique playing pieces and so much more. The verdict is in. With Monopoly Go, there's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now free on the App Store and Google Play.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, I highly recommend that you give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. This show is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. Check out BetterHelp.com/garage today.
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
All right, we are back. Cheers, mates. We are back with Art and Maggie from the Oxygen docuseries, The Disappearance of Mara Murray. Now, do you guys have a hunch on where you think Mara was heading to that night? She was taking a break for some reason, but where do you think she was heading to?
I think that Renner is accurate in that there was somebody else involved, probably. Whether she's going to meet a friend or somebody, I personally don't think that she was going alone. There could have been a tandem driver, like a friend or somebody. I don't think it was a tandem driver and somebody helping her escape. I think they were just going to clear her head. She bought enough booze for two people. I think that there was possibly somebody going with her to just spend the weekend, hang out, take a break. She had all intentions on coming back.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you've got five or six theories, and you see us map them out in one of the episodes.
Yeah, episode five.
Yeah, none of those are completely off the table until we can actually find her or her remains. So, but we looked at the probability of what is more than likely that happened to her, and more than likely, there was foul play involved in what happened to her. Now, whether it was somebody she knows or somebody that mm-hmm. picked her up on the highway, that's the big question. What happened in that 7 to 10 minute time period, which we've probably even narrowed down to like shorter than that. But what happened in that time frame?
Why do you think, in certain cases, especially in this case, that we have evidence that you uncover and then people look at it objectively and they say, well, no, that's not true, even though you've backed up that evidence?
I have no idea why people choose not to believe evidence. Absolutely insanity.
It is insanity.
Even with this, we did know that if someone told us and didn't have evidence, we wouldn't believe them. I understand why people say, okay, Cecil Smith is saying that, but how do we believe him? I get that. I get that people want the evidence, but it's hard. We did know this would happen. We didn't know to the extent of how really intense people are about believing this this police conspiracy theory.
Yeah, people love conspiracies, but you talk to anybody in law enforcement, it's almost impossible to keep a conspiracy together. Sooner or later, somebody's going to talk. And in this particular case, I mean, when we did the timing, when we looked at witness A, when we drove the same route she did, when we interviewed Cecil Smith, it's pretty clear that even without, you know, other type, absolutely it was him, just the timing of it, it had to be him. And, you know, he said he was in the car. You know, it for us, that whole conspiracy theory right now, you know, people are wasting their time spinning their wheels on that, that it was some other cruiser there. That's just not the case.
I mean, it's really going to be embarrassing when it does come out and the information is able to be out there that these people have really exhausted themselves on this bunk theory. We are trying to tell you that this is not the case. Like, if you don't want to believe us, fine, but you're going to look silly.
And you know, even people, even if we had a video of the whole thing, they probably still wouldn't believe it.
No.
So you're going to have that, you know, that portion of people that aren't going to believe it regardless of what we say. But this is why,
in a way, I think Renner is even more respectable than some of these people that think they're more respectable than Renner. Because Renner is looking at the evidence and the facts and saying, okay, maybe I don't think my theory is right anymore.
Right.
He has enough, you know, dignity to say, okay, I might have been wrong. Like, I wrote a book about this and it could be wrong. And that's like way more respectable than, man, it is nuts.
And I'll tell you what, obviously I'm coming from the law enforcement side, the frustration that law enforcement has. I mean, and it goes to a lot of stuff. I mean, you talk to law enforcement is a tough job right now, especially uniform law enforcement. And unfortunately, we kind of go through these cycles every 20, 25 years. We're in one of those cycles right now, and people, for some reason, want to believe that law enforcement is bad for whatever reason. I mean, it feeds something in their ego or in their minds. And I mean, when you sit and spend an hour and a half with each one of these police officers, as we did, listen, I've done internal investigations. Internal actually reported to me when I was a U.S. Marshal, and I can tell you that you can tell when somebody's not telling you the truth or something doesn't pass the smell test. And I can tell you that everything that we uncovered here from the law enforcement side, there wasn't anything where, you know, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. It was just like the simplest explanation is generally the explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we found.
One of my favorite parts of the documentary was that you guys did the drive that Mara had made that night before the accident. Is there any observations or things that occurred to you that didn't make it on camera?
I think the condition of Maura's car, right, Maggie?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we did that whole experiment with the rag in the tailpipe, and we actually drove the car around. You know, we bought a Saturn that was the same year and knocked out one of the cylinders on it and did the experiment in the garage with the rag in the tailpipe. And then they actually drove that vehicle around. And more than likely, even though we did what we did to it, this car was probably in a lot better shape than Morris was. And Maggie, you drove one of those same vehicles when you were at UMass, right?
I did. I had an 04. She had a 96.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hour time discrepancy always kind of puzzled us. You know, did she leave right away after she went to the liquor store? Did she stop somewhere? Did somebody see her? You know,
I have always thought that, when you go to the liquor store and the ATM, they're pretty much right next to each other. When you go to the liquor store, there's a diner directly across the street. And we always used to go there at UMass and go to the liquor store, go to the diner, that ATM. I went to the ATM so many times. But I always thought that she had left the liquor store and then met somebody at the diner and got lunch. And that person knows where she was going.
In the opening to one of the shows, Maggie, you state that the locals seem to think that Mara was abducted. How do you feel about that after meeting with the local people? And does that tell us anything about the area?
Well, that actually came from John Smith. I don't think it made it in his interview, but Art, you were there for that interview, yeah. And John Smith said, you know, I've been up here all this time, and there were some really bad people up here, and he, you know, that came from John Smith, that the people up there are often not that savory. And do I think that it was a local? Yeah, probably I do. I think, like Art said at the beginning, people go up there to be away from everybody. And whether that's just, you know, the lifestyle you like to lead, or you have had a really bad past and you can't be in a place where, you know, you're in the city bumping into people all the time and people know who you are, you're going up there to hide out and live a really private life.
Now, in episode 5, you literally put all 5 theories on the table, and you end up crossing them all out except for one.
Well, I mean, I think we both believe that foul play, that there's foul play involved, that she was killed either by accident or by on purpose, or, you know, somebody had an intention to kill her, or something occurred by accident, either by an unknown person. And you know, when you look at these cases and you do a lot of investigations, generally that if it's somebody that the victim knows, you're going to come to a conclusion fairly quickly. In other words, the case is easier to solve than if it's somebody that has no connection at all to the victim. And, you know, obviously this case has been going on for 13 years. It's a cold case. And I always kind of look at it that, geez, I mean, the state police, the local police, have spent thousands of hours investigating this case. They've conducted grand juries, investigative grand juries. They've put a lot of time, effort, and energy. I mean, even when we came up with a couple of leads, the next day they were on it. So it just seems to me that they've investigated this to the best of their ability. You know, even they'll admit, you know, we wish we had done this different or that different. But you know, none of it was done intentionally. There was no malice in anything they did. They did the best job they tried to do. And that leads me to believe that it's very possibly somebody that she doesn't know, because those are the hardest crimes to solve.
So if she were abducted, or if she got into a vehicle willingly, this is just minutes after she turned down the ride from Butch Atwood. Why would it go down like that?
I think that it's possible she said no to Butch. Art thinks it's this, that Butch, because he was a school bus driver, he worked for the government, the county, I believe, and she saw him as like an employee and didn't want to be involved with the police, that kind of thing. I honestly think it could be as simple as Butch didn't look like, you know, if you're just judging based on appearances, he even said, I mean, he's this old overweight man with a mustache. He could have scared her. I mean, he's just some guy up there. Like, I don't know if I would get in a bus with him. But I think it could have just been some young guy in the area. There's a lot of them that we have found that have been in jail for rape, sexual assault, like horrible, horrible things, that just said, hey, I'm going to this party. Are you okay? You want to get in? She might have trusted him more. And we have heard from family members that Maura had hitchhiked in the past. Who did we hear that from, Art?
Yeah, we heard it from her high school friends, right?
Yeah, that she had hitchhiked. That didn't make it in the show, but that to us says, okay, maybe this young guy pulls up, hey, I'm going to a party. You want to come? Sure.
Yeah, one of the things I looked at, too, was that she was under probation at the time for the pizza incident at UMass. And I think that you know, if she got arrested for operating under the influence, if she was drinking in the car, I know this is all speculation, but to me it kind of makes sense that she would want, you know, Butch pulls up and says, I'll call 911. She says, no, you know, I've called AAA. He knows that's a lie. He goes to his house and calls 911, and of course the Westmans across the street are calling 911 at the time. So, you know, did she want to avoid law enforcement? I would say yes, because she probably would have either been in trouble, you know, obviously for operating under, but it could have put in jeopardy her nursing school too that she was going through at UMass.
Yeah.
Somebody that I believe that should be a person of interest was the track coach Haas, supposedly or allegedly she was having an affair with, but this doesn't come up in the show.
That was one of the things that Art and I, you know, where I was saying how Renner had a lot of good information that he came up with, and we would say, where'd this information come? And it was Renner. The other day we were talking, someone had sent me an email talking about Haas, and we had tried calling him. He wouldn't talk to us, you know, so we couldn't really talk about it in the show. But, you know, afterwards someone sent me an email and I called Art and said, hey, what was up with Haas? Like, did this really get looked at? Like, did the police interview him? Where did all this come from? And Haas wasn't even known about until Renner uncovered that whole thing. So once again, that was Renner doing that. But I don't know. We don't really know what his alibi was, do we?
No, we don't know what his alibi was. But, you know, these are questions that law enforcement, when you ask them, are going to hold back on.
Yeah. Because I think we might have asked, and they can't answer. Yeah,
we did, and you know, we didn't get an answer from them. So this is obviously something they're looking at. We can say they're re-looking at everything.
One thing that I've got to know: can you tell us if Butch Atwood had a CB radio in the school bus?
We asked that question. And I don't know. We tried to actually find out more about that particular bus. We actually tried to get a photograph of it.
Yeah.
And we couldn't come up with one.
I think we tried to track it down at some point.
Right.
Someone tried to track it down.
But my understanding is when he called 911, he did it from his house. He left, went to his house, called 911. It somehow got kind of screwed up. It went to a different dispatch. It didn't go to Grafton County. I think it went to Hanover Dispatch. And then Hanover Dispatch kind of relayed it to Grafton County. And Grafton County actually ended up calling back the residents. And, you know, you bring up a very good point, because you sort of have to put all this together. Now, you've got Westman on 911. You've got Butch Atwood stopping his bus, talking to her, and calling 911. You have the Marats around the corner who also have some visual contact with this accident. And then you've got witness A. All this is occurring sort of in a 10 and 15 minute time frame. And then you've got, obviously, Cecil Smith showing up. So when you put all that together and look at that timeline, which we did, it kind of all makes sense. The big enduring question here is how could somebody turn their head and she's gone in like 7 to 10 minutes? That's always been the big question. You have all these things going on. And I mean, a lot of them are like real important data points, because we have logs, you know, we've got Grafton County logs, and we found out some information about that came out. I don't know if it made it in the interview or not. But we also have that whole jurisdictional fight that somebody reported that thought it was law enforcement. It wasn't law enforcement. It was the two tow truck drivers arguing about who had the money for the tow, you know. So we really have put a lot of this stuff to rest. And when you sit down and look at it, it's like it makes sense. Holy shit, it just makes sense. It's the simplest explanation. And I keep going back to that.
Yeah, and we've even, like, sat around again over a bottle of Tito's being like, okay, what if Butch is lying? What if she got in the bus with him, and then when he went and did that search for Cecil, he, you know, dropped her body somewhere or something happened? Like, we have sat there and said, is that possible? But then we look back at the logs. The Westman saw her after the bus left. Am I correct in saying that, Art?
I think it was, because that was the flurry of the activity at the rear of the
right,
car.
And the Marat saw her. So even the thought of her getting in his bus just didn't happen.
Yeah.
She would have had to walk back over to the house.
And you mentioned the two people and the man with a cigarette. And that's that kind of like has been sort of an argument between the two Westmans as to what each one of them saw. Mr. Westman thinks he saw the light from a cell phone trying to be activated. And Mrs. Westman, I think, wasn't really sure exactly what the heck she saw. So, I mean, that's been questioned too.
One of the crazy things about this case is that cell phone service. There was no cell phone service up in these White Mountains. And I think it's hard for some of us to believe. Is that factual? Like when you were up there investigating?
There is no cell phone service at all.
To this day. It's crazy. Because I think you lose cell phone service the minute you kind of get out of Woodsville. Right, Maggie?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you pick it back up at Beaver Pond, which is at kind of another 10, 11 miles from the crash site heading towards Lincoln.
Now, there's one particular item that the police have received a lot of criticism about, and this is regarding the ATM footage where Mara had stopped to make a withdrawal. Now, one thought that I've had on this, why they've not released this footage, and that's a criticism that they've got, that they've not released it, is that either that this footage does not exist or that they had it in their possession at one time, but it may have been lost.
Well, what we can say, I know this taps to hold tight till episode 6, is that the reason they haven't released it is because if there was, this is me why I think they haven't released it, if there was anybody in that video with her that was not at all related to her, a license plate number of somebody's car, they didn't want all of these people who latch onto insane theories to, you know, think this person was the killer or track down this license plate number. And, you know, these people that are just happened to be in this video to go after them. So,
yeah, that's exactly
right. I think it needs to be protected. And I think that's really a good move to protect the innocent people who would be in that video. And other than that, you'll have to wait till episode 6.
I mean, one of the problems with this case is anybody that has any information or any connection is being, I mean, we had a lot of problems talking to people. People had to get familiar with us because a lot of people, wrong information has been put out with, you know, put out about them. So law enforcement, I know, and they reiterated with that to me today that they don't want people, innocent people harassed that have already been talked to by law enforcement. And really that's not the way to handle a criminal investigation. Put innocent people out there that don't have any association at all. It might have just been standing in the background.
But you both feel confident in saying that A, yes, the ATM footage exists, and B, the police are in possession of it.
Yes.
Yes. You have to wait till episode 6.
One last question. Do you believe that this case is solvable?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. I will tell you this, that when we first, Maggie and I first talked to the state police and the AG's office, they believe this case is solvable. And they have all the information. So if they believe it's solvable, I believe it's solvable. Maggie believes it's solvable. So
And I think that a lot of it, again, I know I sound like I'm coming hard at the police conspiracy people, and it's not that I don't think people should be talking. I just think they should focus their energy, you know, somewhere else.
Right.
But I don't even think it would have been this far if it weren't for people who really, really care and are contacting the police with tangible, real information, and people who have come to me with real information. Some of these leads that people have come forward with lately are really
good.
They're really good. And I even said to Tim and Lance today, I said, hey guys, you know, you've been working on this a lot longer than me and Art. Have you guys been this excited for, you know, this case to be solved? And they said, nothing like this, not at all. So, you know, I think we're all really, really excited, and we do think it will be solved.
A big thank you to James Renner. If you haven't already, go and check out his book, True Crime Addict.
And a big thank you to Art and Maggie. They were so kind to sit down and talk with us.
Also, you keep hearing about Tim and Lance. They are two great guys that did a wonderful podcast that was all about the Mara Murray disappearance. So a big thank you to those guys as well.
Yeah, so check out their podcast, Missing Mara Murray. And the question from a lot of listeners is, hey, you guys covered this case. Yes, we've covered this case before. We talked to Brenner when True Crime Addict came out, and we actually covered this case, and you can find those on our website store or the iTunes store. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thank you so much for sharing on social media. It means the world to us. We got to get out of here because we got a big case for next week.
All right. Until next time, everybody out there, be good. Please be kind, and please don't litter.